Before we start the show, once again, a quick note at the beginning on things that have happened between when we recorded the show and when I'm putting out the show. Hey, it's one of the unfortunate side effects of this being a small personal podcast done not as one's day job. This time, on Friday, December 9th, after we had recorded the show, a number of articles started coming out on the Russian attempts to influence the American election, specifically a report that the CIA had come to the conclusion that it wasn't just about undermining faith in democracy and causing chaos, but it was specifically about trying to elect Donald Trump. Now, a lot of this had been floating around for months. Honestly, there's not much actually directly new here other than the CIA is officially saying it, that that's their conclusion. A lot of people have been thinking this for a long time based on the evidence that was out there. And also that there was an attempt prior to the election where the Obama administration wanted to come out with this information, but only if they could get a bipartisan group from Congress to agree to come out and talk about this in a unified way. A number of Republicans blocked that attempt. The Obama administration kept quiet about it before the election. So obviously there's a lot of interesting stuff there to talk about. And as I am recording this little note, it is still playing out the Obama administration had said, okay, we're going to release a report on this before Obama leaves the presidency, but immediately information started leaking out, and information is still leaking out. So we'll see what we know and when and what the direct evidence is. Apparently there actually is a divide within the intelligence community on how reliable this conclusion is. And specifically, it looks like there's actually a schism specifically between the CIA and the FBI, where the FBI thought this wasn't conclusive and the CIA thought it was. And anyway, and therefore, it affected how both of them approached things, I guess. The FBI obviously put out notices about other things. Anyway, lot of interesting chaos. We do not talk about it on the rest of this show. This note is it for that, because we recorded it before these latest revelations. I am guessing it will be a topic on next week's show, but depending on how fast things move and what else is going on, who knows? Anyway, on with the show. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Friday, December 9th, 2016. It's a little after 4 UTC as we're starting to record this. I'm Sam Minter, as usual, and Yvonne Bo is here, too. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
So, our agenda, and I'm trying to be really good about putting the agenda up front, is we will, of course, have our little introductory segment where we chat a little bit, but then we're going to do Trump cabinet picks. And specifically, what they're shaping up to be. Are they really like Trump people? Are they Pence people? Are they establishment Republicans? Are they crazy people? Who are they? See where we get with that. Then the segment after that will be about Trump and how he's been interacting with taking calls from foreign leaders, specifically the call with Taiwan, although we may mention a few others. I think the one with Pakistan got a little of attention, and we touched on the ones, a couple others last week as well, but mainly Taiwan. Our next segment after that, we're going to talk a little bit about the guy who came in armed to the pizza restaurant in Washington, D.C., and how that relates to this whole Pizzagate conspiracy, which is one that we really haven't talked about on this show because it was batshit insane. Here someone goes trying to act on it. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And then we'll finish it up with a lightning round if all looks good. So, but before we get to all that, Yvonne, how was your week?
Oh, God.
That good, huh?
Yeah. I don't know. This has been busy. I mean, I don't know. It's just been busy.
So
I don't know what else to say about it. I mean, I've been like running around like after things, one after the other. I don't know.
So I'll tell you mine. You know, you guys may have remembered, I believe, last week's show, or maybe it was 2 weeks. I don't know. A while ago, I had a fever on the show. I was sick. I thought I got better from that. I started.
Oh, yeah. You said you thought you had the flu or something? Was it?
I don't know. Anyway.
Something.
This started with what I'm now calling the day of smells.
Okay. Day of smells.
So, yeah, my wife had a little bit of a cold, but you know, my son, you know, I was, you know, we were doing the regular stuff, playing around one evening, and then, you know, my son comes down and sits next to me on the couch and blah blah blah, and he's like, yeah, you have to go look at Amy's sink.
Amy Sink, okay.
That's my daughter, and she has a bathroom.
Yeah. Well,
and okay, I'm like, okay, whatever. I'll look at it in a little while. I don't know what you're talking about. Later. And then a few minutes later, he just starts throwing up, and I'm like, okay, that's lovely. And I help him clean up a little bit, and I'm like, well, that's, you know, how you feeling? Are you okay? And he's like, oh, that was the second time. I told you to look at Amy's sink.
Oh, God.
And then, you know, I'm like, oh, okay. And then suffice it to say, he spends about the next hour, every few minutes, throwing up.
What the hell? Why?
He caught some kind of bug, I guess it was, or maybe he ate something. I don't know. But for the next hour, every few minutes, he was throwing up. And like the first few times, it was like fairly indiscriminate. Like he'd be doing whatever, and then like
all of a sudden, just bloom.
Bloom. Yeah. So, you know, all over the couch, all over a blanket, all over the rug.
Oh, it's okay. I did not have a week like this.
And then, you know, eventually, of course, I got wise and got him like a little bucket kind of thing to, you know, if there was.
Well, there you go. That's, you know,
prudent. And then so, you know, and of course, this all smells wonderful. And after about an hour, it sort of calmed down a little bit. And he wasn't feeling great, but no more of that. But then at one point during this process, I go upstairs to check something in my office and find that our dog had left a nice pile of diarrhea on the floor of my office as well.
What?
So I'm like, lovely. This is excellent. This is a wonderful day for me.
God, thanks.
This is so much fun. Everything smells wonderful. Anyway, that was the main part with the smells. Okay. You know, but in the end, myself, my wife, and my son were all sick with varying different things. None of the rest of us threw up, by the way, but my wife has had a horrible cold. She's been fighting. I've been having a bad cold. I've been fighting, you know, and it's been like a week now. And we're all still in it. Like, you know, I think it's better than it was. But, I mean, I'm still, like, at work. I mean, of course, I went to work anyway. But I was popping DayQuil. I mean, the recommended dosage, of course. But, you know, I was taking DayQuil to keep, like, functional. And, you know, it's been a lovely week for that kind of stuff, I must say. And although it is supposed to start snowing at any moment now where I am right now, so...
It's not common for you guys to get snow, right?
Well, you know, a few times a winter.
Okay, so you do get a few times a winter. Okay.
Yeah, great. I mean, like, last winter we had almost... We had, like... All winter long we had maybe an inch last winter that, you know, came and went really quickly. But most winters, we get two or three episodes where we have, you know, noticeable snow on the ground. And every few years we get, like, a big snow event.
Okay.
So we'll see.
You do get, yeah, so you get, you know, it's not like, you know, it's not like... okay, you get your fair share. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Minnesota or anything. You know?
Right.
For anybody listening who doesn't know, I lived about 25 miles north of Seattle. So, yeah. Anyway, so I was excited by that. I called it the Day of Smells. We had to clean up all kinds of stuff. It was fun, but he felt better. You know, after that hour of throwing up, he felt a lot better.
Well, that's always good, you know, especially when you've got a bug. You know,
and then he was bouncing off the walls, of course, because he's like, "I feel better, yay!"
Yeah, it's standard operating procedure, yes.
And no more diarrhea from the dog.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Anyway, that was my week.
I had nothing of the sort happen this week. I mean, I've been like busy. Notes at a grindstone, just, I don't know, paperwork and stuff.
I've had all kinds of stuff.
Talking to banks and email and...
I've had all kinds of stuff for work that I really wanted to get done this week, but honestly, the way I've been feeling, I've been dragging all week. I've done the minimum of what I need to do, but there's several more things that I was targeting for getting done this week, and at this point I'm triaging and saying, okay, what do I really have to get done by the end of the week? I've got one more day. I've got Friday to finish.
I really would like, you know, like I'm going on vacation from the 23rd, returning on the 9th to work, and I am like really, you know, wanting the 23rd to get here.
I understand. So one more thing, and then we'll take off break. Another, you know, event for me. Not an event. I at one point I was playing games, recording a video for my son's YouTube channel, alexmxela.com. Everybody, go check it out and subscribe. But anyway, and I wanted to move my. I have like my regular iMac, and I have a second monitor for it. And I moved the second monitor to sort of get it in a better position. And it stopped working.
I mean, like, stopped working, not the cable became unplugged, or stopped working, it died?
Stopped working, like, no matter what I do with the cable, I can't get it to get a picture again. Like, I've checked all the connections, I've turned it on and off, I've done all this kind of...
Is the monitor on, and it's not getting...
Yes, the monitor is on.
No.
I did check that, yes.
No. What I mean is, are you getting, like, the message is, like, no input from...
Yes, I'm getting no input.
It's not like the monitor is not turning on. It's, like, it's saying no input from the...
Yes, correct. And the one thing is, this has happened with this monitor before, a long time ago. And... I spent a whole bunch of time at that point unplugging things, plugging back in, changing the monitor, changing the cable. Let's switch it to a new cable. Let's see if it's just the cable. Let's adjust this. Let's try it again.
Right.
And what happened eventually, I think it's happened more than once before. And each one of those times, I go through this rigmarole. I change things. I adjust things. Blah, 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 blah. And then at some point, 1 or 2 weeks later, it just starts randomly working again. And so this time I'm like, I haven't yet made the call that says, screw it. The thing is flaky. I'm just going to get a new one. I'm like, you know, maybe it'll be like all the other times. And after a week or two, it'll just randomly come back without me doing a damn thing.
Yeah.
But it's kind of annoying because I'm really used to having the second monitor.
I get that. Yeah, I can see how that could be.
So like now, like I usually have up... On one screen, I have all the stuff I'm actively working on, and then on the other screen, I put stuff I'm monitoring, like I'll put Twitter and stuff like that on the other screen. And so it's actually really, like, it feels really constrained to throw everything on one monitor. You know, and I know first world problem, I'm being really bitchy about something, and it's like, you know, suck it up, you know, you have a nice computer with a nice big monitor.
You're just a big wussy. Yeah,
that's me.
Yeah, that's you.
Yep, I'm just the big wussy.
Yes, you are.
Okay, on that exciting note, let's take a break. And we will come back and we'll start going through and talking a little bit about Trump's process of staffing up. And we'll be back after this. No, no, it's not the beginning of the show again. We're just taking a little time to credit the artist responsible for the music we use at the beginning and end of the show. What you are listening to right now is The O of Pleasure by Ray Lynch. The music we close our show with is Celestial Soda Pop. Both of these songs are from Deep Breakfast. Now platinum, Deep Breakfast was the first independently released album ever to be certified gold by the RIAA. Ray Lynch's other albums are The Sky of Mind, No Blue Thing, Nothing Above My Shoulders But the Evening, and The Best of Ray Lynch. You can check out Ray Lynch or buy his music at raylynch.com, iTunes, Amazon, or anywhere you usually find music. And we are back. And of course, Yvonne, I wanted to start with, I just to give you a heads up, this is a secret. Don't tell anybody else.
Okay, we're going to keep it secret right here on the podcast.
The reason this whole Secretary of State search is taking so long.
You're talking.
I just haven't had a chance to fly to Trump Tower yet.
Well, I didn't tell you. I was also in the mix as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, my appointment's Tuesday. How about yours?
Mine's like Monday.
Yeah. I mean, he tells me I pretty much have it, though. So, you know.
Okay. Well, that's good. I think, but you know, you should know. I think he's you know, they've got it to like about almost everybody else on this thing, you know?
I don't know. I don't know.
I think
I'm a shoo-in. Yeah,
I mean, you think you're a shoo-in?
I'm a shoo-in.
I mean, I hope so. I can get a job with you at the State Department. That would be nice.
So anyway.
I mean, is this search? I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this. In Trump's defense, I can't believe I just said those words. Look, he's been, he is ahead of others in terms of appointing.
Yeah, when we first talked about it, we talked about the first week, the transition was sort of in disarray. They weren't connecting. They weren't doing things because they didn't expect to win. They were sure they had lost. Just like everybody else, they expected to lose.
Yes.
So they were caught off guard by the fact they actually won.
Holy fuck, we won. Right.
But they have since ramped this process up and are going faster than, as you said, the last few administrations have. They've been doing this pretty quickly. Now, the interesting part I want to talk about, I mean, we were talking about Secretary of State, and there's some interesting stuff there we'll talk about in a second. But the thing I am finding interesting is trying to figure out which of these are really and truly Trump picks, where he is directly involved and choosing and saying and cares, basically, versus ones where he's basically like, whatever.
Or I saw that he went to dinner that one night, the one with Romney, he was with Priebus.
Yeah. So which of these are just him saying to Priebus or Pence or whoever, I don't know, you pick somebody and I'll sign off on it. Because...
I mean, there hasn't been that many leaks about this, so I don't know.
I'm just trying to, like, from the names, like, I think... Michael,
I think there's heavy influence of these guys.
I think to start with, the three that he's done that don't require Senate confirmation, Michael Flynn for National Security Advisor, Priebus for Chief of Staff, and Bannon for Chief Strategist, I think those three are all Trump.
Okay.
That's my gut, is that those three are... Priebus is a little weird. I think Priebus may be one that he... threw in, because there was that whole thing about Bannon, Priebus, who's going to be on top, and I think he figured out this thing is a compromise, and you know, Priebus isn't really, quote-unquote, his guy, but he was trying to give that, hey, establishment, here's somebody to make you happy. But I feel like those three are probably the ones he's had the closest touch on. And that, of course, he is heavily involved in State Department because he's making this game show out of it. Most of the rest, I actually, maybe Mattis. Mattis for defense, he was probably involved in. I think those seem like the ones he's been, you know. But then we look at, like, some of these others, and I don't know. Let's go through of them, through some of them. Puzder, is that how you say it? Which one was Puzder? He's the fast food guy that was announced most recently for labor secretary.
That one, I'm like, I don't know what to make of that.
So here's one of them. He was a big donor to the campaign. So that could just be a payback kind of thing. And if so, that seems like a Trump one. He gave me a lot of money. I'll pay him back. Same thing for the Small Business Administration, Linda McMahon.
Yep.
That's also somebody Trump has worked with in the past and who gave a lot of money. So that seems like a Trump pick.
Okay.
EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt.
Now, that one sounds like a Pence.
Yeah. Pick. Pruitt... of course, is well known for having fought the EPA in all kinds of things. And this seems like one of these, hey, this is like a hardcore conservative pick. So this seems like a Pence guy. And I believe he's had some interactions with Pence in the past as well. So that seems like Pence. Homeland Security... General John F. Kelly.
This has to be like a Republican, like Priebus. Like, what did these guys recommending these people? He doesn't know any fucking generals. reality.
I think you're right on. You might be right on Kelly. I'm not sure. I think Mattis and the one we talked about before, Flynn, are both ones that were involved in the campaign and supported him early. So I think those two might be Trump ones, but Kelly. Okay. This might be someone that came from somewhere else. By the way, just as an aside, before we keep going through names, there've been a lot of people sort of saying, isn't that a lot of generals? What's up with all the generals? So far, unless he names more generals, he's got the same number of generals as Obama had. So the interesting part is and I guess this is the next one on my list here. By the way, I'm looking at the New York Times has a running list of these. The title of the article is Donald Trump is choosing his cabinet. Here's the latest list. As of what I'm looking at, it was last updated December 8th. Mattis for defense secretary, the interesting part is they have to get a congressional waiver for him because he hasn't been a civilian long enough. Because right. when the Department of Defense was created in the wake of World War II, one of the, you know, things in the law that founded the Defense Department was we don't want ex-generals unless they've been out of office for a while. And originally, I believe it was 10 years, and then it was cut down to 7 years later on. But he's only been out like three or four, something
like that? I thought it was four.
Let's call it four. Of course, rather than look it up and tell you the right number, we'll...
Yeah, well, that would take work.
Yeah, so let's call it four. Anyway, less than seven. But he's probably is another Trumpy. And the reason, by the way, that we're trying to sort of read the tea leaves on these are trying to see where this administration is really going to go.
I think here's one thing about that, because that was about where this administration is going to go. Look, I think everybody is like having a meltdown about every appointment every day.
Well, here's
here's
one thing I want to distinguish, because this has actually been annoying me somewhat about this. Like, there are all these meltdowns about, oh my God, I can't believe he's appointed this guy. It's the end of the world. It's the blah, 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 blah. Like, there's a significant number of these that are, you would expect similar appointments out of any Republican who won the White House.
Right.
So I think, you know, and I understand to many people, any Republican winning the White House is a complete and utter disaster. And I get that, but like, I think we need to distinguish between, you know,
but the thing is that a lot of these people, especially a big chunk of the ones that are freaking out, okay, are the same fucking people that said that it made no fuck. A lot of them said that there's no fucking difference between having Trump or Hillary as president.
Well, there's a significant difference there.
Well, but a lot of these fucking people, Trump or Hillary, there's no fucking difference.
I know a lot
and
of
I'm
talking about a lot of the this rump group of Sanders folks who never came along, and the Stein people fit into that category more than anybody else. Maybe a few Johnson people, but really we're talking about the people who never let go of the fact that Sanders didn't win is, I think, the biggest group who fit into the category you're talking about, who are like, you know, well, if we don't get Sanders, what the hell difference does it make? Well, this is the difference that it makes.
This is the difference that it makes. You get an EPA secretary who is a fucking climate skeptic, and you get an education secretary that basically doesn't appear to believe in public education, and shit like that.
We haven't gone through all the names yet, but I think one of the themes that a number of people have pointed out is that if you take the national security offices off the table, almost all of the other appointments to head agencies are people who specifically believe that that agency shouldn't be doing what it's doing at all. And you know, like you said,
or doing it quite differently, because
in many cases, like you said, for education, you know, they don't believe in public education. Maybe that's an exaggeration, but you know what I mean. It's like
she doesn't like public schools. The Vos was a very strong advocate for basically turning everything into a voucher program, and expanding charter schools and that kind of shit.
Right. So, but a labor secretary who's campaigned against unions,
moron down that lives near me. What's his name? Carson to fucking like head HUD.
Yeah.
Who thinks like that anybody that's like, you know, that is poor by choice.
And you're going to fill it as grain storage or something. Anyway. Let's hit a couple of these other names specifically.
I'll start with the EPA guy.
Yeah.
What's his name? Pruitt, right? Okay, look. And look, we've had a Republican administration before. We had 8 years of George Bush. Okay, look, I'm still like not like going to believe that fucking government is going to be ripped apart. One of the things about this guy that I read, a lot of his objections to a lot of the stuff that the EPA was doing, you know, he had some climate skepticism that I saw, but a lot of the stuff had to do with the fact that I saw that what he said was the stuff that the EPA is doing, that they're doing by regulation, was not legislated.
Right. Should be done by congressional law instead.
Correct.
Yeah.
And that is not a crazy notion.
No, I mean, you want to separate a couple things out, though, in those kinds of arguments. One is the sort of pure version that says, hey, Congress really should be making these laws in detailed form rather than just making a law that says, and we'll give an executive agency the authority to make regulations, because that's Congress shirking its duty. So part of it is the sort of principled separation of powers, how it should work. And on that, and I actually agree, like, it's better when Congress makes an explicit law than when it just says, let the executive branch decide. Because
exactly.
Every time that happens, that's a ceding of authority and gathering up, more power under the executive branch. And I generally think there's been a move of way too much power to the executive branch, and Congress needs to take some of that back. We've talked about that on the show many times before, and frankly, when you get to some of the national security stuff specifically, you know, I've seen a number of libertarian type folks say, hey, now all of a sudden all the liberals are coming around to maybe it's better to limit executive power. They were fine with it as long as it was Obama, but now that it's Trump,
let's be clear about this. Some people, obviously. Look, I think that you and I have talked about executive power and like the fact that Congress should be doing more. Congress, you know, has been abdicating more and more of their role to the executive branch and not reasserting it. I mean, that's been their they've been doing that over and over. But you know, some of the people that are talking about Obama in terms of like use and abuse of executive power, if you look at how many executive orders and other things he did, it's not like he was like some.
There are a couple things that, like, executive orders isn't the right measure. If you look at numbers, it's not appropriate either, because it's about what the scope of the orders that he does are. But also, it's not just executive orders. It's use of the powers for regulation. It's use of things like, you know, people have talked about him declaring national monuments, and completely aside from that, in the national security area, there's use of the massive expansion of the drone program, of the surveillance program, et cetera, et cetera. So there are a lot of places that aren't just easily measured by, you know, the number of executive orders.
Surveillance program. Fucking the surveillance program was in place like before.
But
you mean by the office of the president?
Yeah. Let me just state this out front. Yeah. Yes, Obama massively increased and brought on a lot of additional executive power, but he's just continuing the trend that has existed for the last 100 years.
In large part, it has been because Congress has created a significant vacuum in terms of lack of
Congress has repeatedly over and over and over again sort of failed to step up to the plate and exert themselves, either in terms of actively legislating to do X, Y, or Z to try to solve a problem, or to defend against the president so that when the president overreaches, they slap back. It just hasn't happened.
They just haven't been doing it. The thing is that when you saw Congress that was trying to assert their power, it is Congress that, you know, passed a lot of laws and then would get into veto fights with the president on a regular basis. And the reality is that Obama has basically had issued, I think he broke the record for the least number of vetoes ever by a president.
Right.
Which what that shows you is that Congress wasn't doing dick.
So we're getting a little off track. So let me
Go back. But it goes. But the point. We got into a very specific weed about it. But the whole point that we're talking about this, and we're talking about, say, who's being appointed to the EPA, who's being appointed to some of the other positions. A lot of the stuff that they if they were going to upend a whole bunch of stuff. If you take some of the interpretation from some of these people, they're believing that that for example, you got a guy at the EPA who believes that Congress should be, legislating a lot more of what's going on. You've got somebody in education that wants to do a lot of reform, but at the same time, in order to do that kind of reform, the types of stuff that they're trying to do, that would take a lot of legislation.
Well, and also, I want to point out, you know, as much as people are freaking out about it, again, it's sort of, what is the, like, let's take education as an example. What are the agenda items they want? You know, more charter schools, more local control, more decentralization. These are not like, this is mainstream Republican orthodoxy on how to deal with education. Exactly. This is not like insane, crazy, oh my God, Trump is Hitler stuff. This is just a Republican like, one. Stuff.
And it's stuff like, you know, that for the most part, you know, a lot of the control is exerted by the states.
Right. And by the way, it's also stuff where if you go, you know, on specific pieces of that, I don't necessarily disagree with all of it. There's a lot of questions about implementation and how you would do it. And can you do it in a fair way? And can you do it in a way that doesn't cause major, I don't necessarily disagree with the idea of vouchers to go to private schools if you do it in such a way that you don't destroy the public schools and leave a whole bunch of people who can't afford it with no options, you know?
Exactly. So you've got that you've got, for example, what the hell is the Health and Human Services, the doctor that they appointed to Health and Human Services.
Let's hit this real quick. We talked about Puzzeret, Labor Secretary.
Yep.
He's the fast food guy. Anything specific to think about him? You know anything about him? Any thoughts?
I know nothing of that. He makes expensive burgers, I guess. The what is it? What has he got? Carl's Jr., I think it is.
Carl's Jr. and Hardee's.
I don't know. That's just really weird.
Okay, and then he was a donor. We had Linda McMahon at Small Business Administrator, donor. Scott Pruitt at EPA, we talked about a lot. General Kelly at Homeland Security. I've heard a lot of people say decent things about him. I don't know very much about him. Mattis at Defense Secretary. As I said, he's somewhat controversial. I don't know. Do you have any other thoughts on him?
No, not really. I mean, he's just, you know.
Yeah. Okay. The controversy there is because he's a general and he's being put in at defense.
That's the only controversy. That's it. Okay.
I mean, he was also known as a critic of the Obama administration, which you would expect. You know.
Yeah.
Trump's not going to pick somebody who is a cheerleader for Obama.
But the thing is that these are, you know, what I love about these are people that I know they love. You know, like, from the peanut gallery, it's great to criticize a lot of these policies. And I'm like, you know, we'll see what the hell they do in practice. Okay. Because, you know, from the peanut gallery, it's all free, you know?
Okay. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin from Goldman Sachs. Any thoughts about that?
What difference is that? We've had a stream of Goldman Sachs people fucking like. Be Treasury Secretary.
It's like that's a requirement, right?
In order yes, to be apparently. A treasury? Yes. Yes.
No matter which party.
No matter which party.
Yeah.
I'm like.
Do you know anything about this guy specifically? I know.
But he's a Goldman banker. Whatever. You know. Next.
Okay, Elaine Chao for Transportation Secretary.
I don't know anything about her.
Now, the only interesting thing about her. Is she was in George W. Bush's cabinet as Labor Secretary, and she's Mitch McConnell's wife. And what makes this interesting is that it's clearly an establishment choice. Like, this is not a radical out there.
No.
This is somebody who's been in Republican administrations before, is closely tied through marriage to a Republican congressperson. This is, for all the, drain the swamp kind of stuff, I guess that's one of the criticisms that's come up a lot about this is not draining the swamp. This is establishment person after establishment person after establishment person for the most part.
Right.
They're just, Republican establishment people. So, of course, liberals are going to go nuts. But, then we had you were asking about H&HS. It's Tom Price.
Tom Price, who, look, he has been a big critic of the Affordable Care Act. Okay. All right. And whatever and so forth. And I'm like, beautiful. Listen, him, Paul Ryan, all these fucking bozos. Now have a chance to go and fix it because they think, they know better. And I'm like, now, it's not just that they know better. You got to remember that they spent like 6 years saying that they're repeal and replace, which all of a sudden, has become the biggest comedic joke on earth because, Ryan says, yeah, we're going to repeal it, but we're going to
repeal and delay.
We're going to exactly. That's what they should change is repeal and delay.
No, that's actually what they're calling it. That's actually what they're calling it.
But that's what I'm saying. It's beautiful. It's like idiotic. Yeah, we're gonna.
Well, and this is because they need time to come up.
They had 6 years to come up with something else.
Now, to be fair to them, there have been several something else's proposed. There have been several alternative plans proposed by different Republicans. The problem is they don't have one that they can all agree on.
My point exactly. That is my point exactly. All these guys have been saying how this thing sucks. It sucks. We need to repeal. And they kept passing time after repeal, repeal, repeal to get nowhere. They did this repeal votes. But guess what? They have no strategy on what the hell to replace it with. Nothing. And that's why they're going to repeal. Oh, we'll just delay it into whatever because – we really don't know what to do. I said the other day that the equivalent of this is like, yeah, okay, you want to get married? Okay, great, beautiful. Well, we're going to set a wedding date. It's like about 3 years from now. Yeah. Get married. Yeah, that's fine. It's fine. 3 years from now. give you time to change your mind. Give you time to, I don't know, whatever the fuck. But this is what they're doing.
Okay. Wilbur Ross for Commerce Secretary.
I don't know. Some guy. So this is the guy. Did he run a hedge fund or something or whatever? I think it was.
Yeah, something like that. I guess that Forbes's estimate is $2.9 billion. He says that the U.S. must free itself from the bondage of bad trade agreements, etc. So this seems like another potential aligned with Trump type person because. This is one of the areas where Trump does differ from Republican orthodoxy of the past, which has been all about free trade. And that is not where Trump is. And this guy seems to be more aligned with Trump.
Yeah, and of course, there's a lot of congressmen already that are Republicans that are like, let's just say, they're quite concerned about that.
Yeah. Okay, and then you talked about Betsy DeVos for Education Secretary. We talked a little bit about that.
Yep.
Nikki Haley for UN Ambassador.
I'm trying to figure out why.
This seems like another establishment one. I mean,
I don't know about an establishment one, but it seems like giving something to the establishment. Yes, agree.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's putting her in a position that I'm sure will be somewhat marginalized, because Trump's going to pay a lot of attention to the UN. You think?
Not really. No, I don't know if he's going to pay much attention to the fucking presidency at this point. To be honest with you, so I don't like. The UN is like the least of our problems. I think he's more interested still in going back on the campaign trail. He wants more publicity.
Okay, let's buzz through the rest of these. You mentioned Ben Carson at Housing and Urban Development. That'll work well, I'm sure. after weeks of him protesting that he wasn't qualified and shouldn't take a cabinet post, he ends up with one anyway.
Right.
Mike Pompeo for CIA Director.
I don't know who that is.
I know nothing about him. The only thing it mentions here is he was in the House Intelligence Committee and was one of the people grilling Hillary Clinton about Benghazi.
Okay. That's nice.
Jeff Sessions for Attorney General. This is another one of those controversial, but
a whole bunch of controversy around him surrounded like some remarks that he had done like sometimes a while ago.
The guy is a
very conservative guy.
He's a very conservative guy. He had a history of fighting against civil rights legislation in the past. That's why he was rejected in 1986, which was a long time ago, by the way, for a federal judgeship because of racially charged comments. But apparently, you know, he's a senator. His fellow senators like him. He's a shoo-in for confirmation. He's fairly conservative, which makes me think that this might be another Pence guy.
Yeah, yeah, it may well be, yeah.
And then we, you know, ending it out, we talked at the beginning about Flynn, Priebus, and Bannon. I think those are Trump guys. I don't know, like, just judging all these, I think this is really a mix, and there seem to be three categories. There's Trump's friends and people who donated to his campaign and who basically he's rewarding for being loyal. They're uber conservatives that I think are coming in through the influence of Pence. And then they're sops to mainstream Republicans. And I think those are the three categories. And he's been mixing them up. They really are. We've got some big ones still left over as we're recording this. He hasn't announced Secretary of State yet. He keeps adding more names. He hasn't announced Director of National Intelligence, Interior, Agriculture, Energy, VA, or the U.S. Trade Representative. I don't know. I think that's more than enough for this segment. I've been trying to keep these segments to 20 minutes. We just went 30. So let's cut this one off. We'll take a break. And when we come back, we will talk about the Taiwan call and related issues. Back after this.
Celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, we are back. So, Trump has been, since the election, taking a number of phone calls from world leaders to say congratulations and just to open up an initial dialogue. Some of the stuff that we've been hearing about these are basically how random many of them have been. Because, you know, traditionally, like how these things had happened, it's actually very carefully planned. Who's going to be the first one to talk? Like, and traditionally, like, it's always, you know, the UK or maybe Israel or somebody like that is the first.
But apparently now it was like, let's see whoever apparently had the bigger the development project on hand or who apparently had the best lobbyists.
Well, and that
was getting rid of lobbyists.
That was part of it, but a lot of it also appears to be like, you know, how do these people get in touch? There have been foreign leaders who've been like, I don't know how to get in touch with him. And then they're like, they call the person who has a development and they're like, oh, I have his cell phone number. And then they call his cell phone.
There you go. That's great. That sounds like a great idea. I like that plan.
So you can just see him. He's sitting there in his office. His cell phone rings and he picks it up and he's like, oh, it's the president of Germany to talk to you or whatever, you know? And, okay. Hi. How you doing? You know?
Hey, how's it going? Yeah. You know, how's Germany? Yeah. It's Black Forest, right? Yeah. It's cold, right? Yeah. Well, you know, yeah. And, how's the cars?
And yet it's the chancellor. I know, whatever.
Whatever. Yeah.
But, you know, so a lot of these have seemed to be fairly random, like who he's talking to in what order seems not to be particularly planned so far. We talked a couple weeks ago about, you know, when he was talking to the folks from Japan, his daughter was in the room. Was it Argentina where there was that development?
Yep.
And, you know, all of a sudden after he has the phone call, you know, some permits ease up on developing whatever he was developing. It's just a coincidence, I'm sure. Things like that. In this week, there were two that made news. One was a call with Pakistan, where a readout of the call was released by the Pakistanis. That it's very odd if you read it. If you Google it, you know, you can completely see Trump saying it. He's complimenting, is it a prime minister of Pakistan, probably? Complimenting them on, you know, how great they are and this and that and the, you know, sort of mutual admiration society kind of comments. He says he'd like to visit Pakistan, and I'll help you any way I can and stuff like that, which of course, like, immediately, you know, India perks up their ears, you know. But then the one that made the most noise was he took a call from the president of Taiwan. There has not been a call with a president or president-elect since 1979. The Chinese got a little upset. And there was a big question about, okay, was this completely random? Did he know what the hell he was doing? Was this an intentional policy move? If it was an intentional policy move, was it the right way to do it? Because, you know, hey, a lot of people, especially on the right, have been saying we should be taking a harder line towards China, and we should be more open that, you know, hey, Taiwan isn't a province of China or whatever. And it seems like sort of the latest that came out was the way that this developed was the Taiwanese have a contract with Bob Dole's firm to lobby on their interests in the United States. And Bob Dole and his firm have contacts in the Trump transition and basically arranged this call to happen.
Weren't we like getting rid of the lobbyists? Wasn't that this whole thing? Wasn't that the Trump train thing?
Draining
the swamp and the lobbyists.
And apparently there are a bunch of Trump people in Trump's orbit who have been advocating for a while for an increased opening with Taiwan, even if it would stick a thumb in the eye of the Chinese, because they think the Chinese need a thumb stuck in their eye.
I actually don't disagree with that. My whole thing about it was, I'm just wondering how planned it is. A number of people in Taiwan, their concern right now is that, you know, look, yeah, great. So Donald Trump gets to thumb his nose, you know, at the Chinese and get some mileage out of that. But then, you know, the guys that are going to get the consequences from this is Taiwan, you know?
Well, and my question is still, even if Trump's people were doing this intentionally, I really do wonder how much Trump was in on it. Like, okay, I completely acknowledge that, okay, some of the people around him probably knew exactly what they were doing. But at the moment Trump picked up the phone, did he know that people were going to get pissed about this? He might have. He's shown he doesn't care. Like, that's not something that's going to worry him, and he likes that kind of thing. But I think one of the things that we're all trying to suss out in all of this, and the last segment on his cabinet appointees and other appointees is part of this as well, is how much of the Trump administration is really going to be driven by Trump versus how much are all the people around him just doing what they want and using him as a figurehead?
Look, let's be clear. Trump, I think, believes that all publicity is good publicity.
Yep. Period. Absolutely.
all publicity.
He's said this multiple times.
So as long as his name is at the top of the marquee, he's going to keep doing all of this kind of shit. And I think that that's the biggest driver of him, like, right now.
And do you think in this particular case, do you think this was, because at first the debate was very strongly, is he just stumbling into an accident because stumbling into this because he doesn't know better? Or is this an intentional savvy act where he's intending to change American policy?
I think he didn't give a fuck or really understood the big significance of it. Or didn't just care.
Now, on the flip side, do you think the significance of this has been overstated? Do you think China has so far been fairly restrained in their response on this?
I think at this point they're leaning on how they sold the explanation to this. Oh, they played a trick on him. Blah, blah, blah. He's just a kind of dumb boob and just didn't know.
Right.
That's been kind of like their explanation to it. So.
And basically what they're doing is giving him the opportunity to back out of it if it's not an intentional change of policy.
Exactly. At this point, yes.
Now, some of what Trump and his people have said since then have leaned towards, hey, this very much was intentional, but I think they're going to wait and see what he does as president. Now, if, you know, the second week in office, Donald Trump decides to recognize Taiwan and say, yes, you are an independent country, well, that changes a whole lot of equations, and then we see what happens. But
the thing is that I still say about this is that, you know, say we do. I just don't know. I mean, the Chinese options, if we decide to do that, there aren't. I mean, yeah, they can be all pissed off they want, but they don't have a lot of good options as to how to react to that, is the reality. I mean, all the options are bad.
Right.
And they may well, which is the fear that some people have in Taiwan, that they may well use one of those bad options.
And just to be explicit, like, bad option number one that everybody's afraid of is China says, fuck it, we're invading, we're taking over, we're done with this game.
Yeah, right. I mean, that would be one, that they launch a war.
Now, that would be an incredibly dramatic move. And I would suspect that the Chinese don't really want that either and would do everything they could
Taiwan
to avoid it.
Taiwan is also armed to the teeth. I mean, we've armed them with billions and billions of dollars of weapons. So it's not exactly like it's also like a pushover.
And while we have never explicitly said, we've avoided explicitly saying we would come to Taiwan's defense, we have implied it heavily at various times. And if you're in the world of a belligerent Donald Trump who is intentionally doing this to provoke China, maybe we would. I don't know. Like I said, though, I think China themselves, they don't want this conflict. They want to keep making their goddamn money off iPhones. You know,
I would think, but sometimes, you know, people do stupid shit. I mean, look, all this conflict that Russia has gotten into the last couple of years has cost like Russia billions and hundreds of billions of dollars. Putin hasn't given a shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think the Chinese have the same mindset?
I don't think so, and they haven't shown that so far, but I'm just playing devil's advocate with it, saying, I mean, you know, they could, you know, take that attitude. They haven't really taken that attitude. I mean, their attitude has been more of like pushing the boundaries of what they're getting away with, you know, and they're exerting more, more footprint around where they live and just, you know,
well, and
everybody know that.
And the hawkish argument, of course, here is that they are pushing these limits and they will continue to expand those limits until we push back. And so therefore the hawks want to be very forceful in pushing back on the islands in the China Sea and Taiwan and all of these other issues to basically you know, push the Chinese back and say, no, no, stop that. And the question, of course, is, can you do that? Do the Chinese back off, or do you end up escalating into an actual conflict at some point?
Now, just to
pivot a little bit, during one of the breaks, Yvonne said that he wanted to take this segment and perhaps generalize a little bit beyond just, hey, this particular provocation with China, but other sorts of things Trump is doing to sort of make a show during this transition. And I know you'd mentioned the Boeing deal and South Bank and Boeing tweets,
the carrier deal. I mean, everything, it just seems like, you know, look, whatever, like I think you said it, whatever the hell that morning he wakes up, he grabs his attention. He's just, you know, he's just tweeting it, and he loves to see. I mean, he is so enthralled by seeing the fucking reaction. I mean, look, everybody that's described it knows him very well, that he is a narcissist, okay?
Yeah.
What the hell? How could you not love what is going on right now if you're him? Time magazine covered a year. Every time I tweet something, it's like the fucking, like, you know, front page news. I mean, shit. He is loving life right now.
Oh, yeah. And you know, you mentioned Boeing, that he criticized the Air Force One deal, but it happened like 20 minutes after there was an interview with the CEO of Boeing where he said something negative about Trump's trade policies or something like that. So it was a direct reaction to that. The carrier stuff, yeah, the story he told at the speech was he'd pretty much forgotten anything he'd said about carrier during the campaign, but then he saw somebody on TV or somebody who was like, Trump said he'd keep these jobs from leaving, and Trump's like, I don't remember saying that, but then they showed me a tape of me saying it, so I guess I did say it, so I guess I should do it. You know?
Right.
But that's an example of one thing that, and I think all of these actually are examples where if you look at the actual effects of what he's doing, there's not much.
Right.
Or it's fairly limited. Like, you know, in the carrier example, okay, he saved a few jobs, but at a significant cost, and it might set a precedent that causes negative ramifications further down the line. But,
oh, yeah, everybody's going to be banging for a deal. Right.
But from an optical point of view, the thing that many Americans will see there, especially Trump supporters, they don't care about all those details. All they hear is Obama did nothing for so many years, and look, he's not even president yet, and he saved a whole bunch of jobs in Indiana.
Right.
And that's it. That's all they know. That's all they care. That's all they remember about this. And that's the lasting impression. If you are not following this in detail, if you are not paying attention to the detail, if you don't care about the detail, all you know is that Trump is acting forcefully. Trump is actually doing stuff. Whereas, you know, Obama, the impression is he didn't.
But look, I will say this. Look, this is like, look, obviously now, of course, that he's president-elect, he's even getting more attention.
Yes.
For all of this shit. But I got to tell you something. Look, there is going to be a moment when fatigue is going to start to set in with all of this shit. And we're just going to start not giving a fuck.
I wouldn't hold your breath. I mean,
look, dude, nobody can sustain attention for that long. Nobody. Okay.
The president always gets a certain level of attention.
Like you said, a certain level of attention. Not this much. Not for everything.
Right. We'll start paying attention to other things. And also people, I mean, I gotta think at some point, I mean, there's so many people pointing out, there's so many people pointing out the pattern and about, yeah, you just said it. He tweets and it's front page news. But if there's nothing actually behind the tweet, if nothing actually happens of it, if he tweets about canceling the Air Force One contract and then zero, zip, zilch, nothing happens.
People are going to stop putting them in the fucking front page news anymore.
Right.
And people get fatigued, man. I mean, there is just, listen, I'm sorry, but there is, I mean, it's just, it's just unsustainable. It's how long could the CNN Malaysia airline crash?
It took a while, but look, one of the dangers of the Trump type personality, though, is that if he starts
he'll try to do something even more outrageous,
he'll escalate.
Right. No, I agree. But the thing is, but that's also a double-edged sword. Look, you start escalating, you start into the problem of, like, doing something actually idiotic that's going to backfire as well.
Well, come on. So, like, how many of these things have we looked at and said, that's idiotic, that's going to backfire, and it doesn't?
No, but you gotta get off the mindset that this guy – listen, this guy did not win the majority of the votes in this fucking country. We've got a president off a fucking fluke that he got three fucking states that he won by, like, nothing, okay? So, look, the reality is that with all that shit he had, he didn't have majority support. If he keeps doing flaky shit like that, look, it eventually – it always catches up, man. I mean, no, but it's just it's just – you can't – I keep saying you can't just sustain it forever.
Well,
and if you start doing even crazier shit, it's going to catch – listen, there's a difference between being on the campaign trail and the attention that you get at the campaign trail and the attention that you get as president, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, I really do think that there is a different level of attention that gets paid. So I just, you know, we'll see. I mean, I think, look, eventually, you know, look, I got to tell you something. I think he will tire of it as well. At some point. No, I'm telling you. Look,
I don't think he'll tire of this stuff. I think he'll tire of actually being president and actually having to do stuff.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. So, I mean, this is a man who apparently doesn't want to move to the White House.
No.
I mean, apparently doesn't seem to be interested in being in Air Force One. Apparently is not it. I don't know what the hell this son of a bitch is interested in.
Uh-huh. Okay.
This guy sit down to really negotiate the complexities of legislation to replace the Affordable Care Act.
No, he's not going to do any of that stuff. For all of that stuff, he has made it very clear. He wants to be the high level, making America great again figurehead. He will set high level direction at best, and then he's going to tell whichever of his flunkies, you go deal with that.
Right.
He's not going to get down into the weeds and details of anything. That is not something Donald Trump does.
Well, actually, but I've heard the opposite. They say that he is, like, you know,
in the actual negotiations.
Yes. Huh? Yes.
I guess we'll find out. Maybe. Because the other thing is, of course, he's very well known for non-disclosure agreements and stuff. Apparently, the transition staff all had to sign non-disclosure agreements, even though they're government employees at this point rather than his employees. And so he's very big on making people not talk. So I've heard somebody compare it to old style Kremlinology, where you're trying to figure out what the Soviet leaders were doing, because there was no, unlike most things that happen in an American system where there's a lot that's wide out in the open as people are yelling at each other and arguing and blah, blah, blah. It was very secretive and you didn't hear much about it. And people are talking about trying to analyze what's going on inside the Trump camp the same way.
Well, look, we certainly had a lot of leaks about what the hell's going on in the Trump camp this year, and I don't expect it to be any different when it's going to be the government.
Well, yeah, and some of it is completely him. Like, I mean, all this stuff about, you know, the rigmarole of who they're looking at for Secretary of State,
leaked his taxes from 95.
No. But I mean, the fact that we know about his deliberation process for Secretary of State is entirely because he wants us to know. He wants to make a show of that. You know, he's parading the people in and out. He's talking about who the contenders are. You know, he's doing his own little apprentice thing on that, you know? And I think there will be a lot of that when he wants there to be. And you're right, there'll be all the usual leaks, but Trump seems to get really pissed about those. So if I think... if there are unauthorized leaks that he does not approve of, you may see heads roll.
But that was when his organization was very small, because his organization was relatively small. This is not that small a ship is the problem.
It won't be. Yep.
So it won't be. And so it won't be that easy to do that anymore.
Yep.
That's the difference.
Okay. Enough on this. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about Pizzagate. Back after this.
Waiting with you, watching the podcast, or really listening. There we go. Easy. OuchMzilla.com by Baby and Dad. Baby videos and more from Baby. And when she baby by day, YouTube by baby, babyxilla.com.
Okay, now do it for real. Do a real one. Tell people about your channel and why they should watch.
Alexa by Alex and Dad. The end. XMZilla.com by Alex and Dad. Gaming videos and more from Alex. Elementary school by day, YouTube by night, AlexMzilla.com.
Spell it.
AlexMzilla.com.com. The end.
Okay. Thank you very much, Alex. Are you getting...
Babies!
Okay. So, you know, as the campaign was going on, there were a few crazy things that were bubbling up.
Quite a few.
And, you know, on our side, we talked about the person who was accusing Donald Trump of child rape that didn't have any evidence actually put out in the end. Although a lot of circumstantial stuff, who knows? But on the other side of things, there were a couple. One was the spirit cooking thing. Had you heard about that one?
Yes, I do vaguely remember now.
This was somehow some Clinton folks were doing satanic rituals of some sort.
Right. Yep. Yep.
This is bullshit. Okay.
Right.
The other one that was complete and total bullshit was this Pizzagate thing.
Which was just beyond insane. We didn't even touch it.
Now, to be clear, what this rumor thing was that was being spread...
You're calling it... Listen, rumor is something that may be true. No. What this fake story...
Which, by the way, may once again have partially been spread by the Russians, because a lot of the social media accounts sharing this apparently were from Eastern Europe. But in any case, basically, there's a pizza place in Washington, D.C., and the rumor is that John Podesta and other Clinton people had pizza here, but it wasn't really about pizza. Because pizza and other items on the menu were secret code for various things you could do to the child sex slaves who were kept in the basement.
Right.
And Hillary Clinton, John Podesta, and pretty much a bunch of other people involved in the Hillary Clinton campaign were secretly running this child sex slavery ring out of the pizza place in Washington, D.C.
I can't fucking believe that we're fucking talking about this.
And So, a lot of people believed this.
Yep.
And, you know, it's bad enough that you even have to go that far. Apparently, one of them, you know, election is all over, all of this is done, but one of the people who believed this was so upset about the fact that nobody cared about this child sex ring and this pizza place.
He decided to go investigate.
So he drove from South Carolina to Washington, D.C. in his Prius, armed, of course.
To the teeth, yes.
And he came into this pizza place and apparently just, you know, held everybody hostage, essentially, while he investigated to try to find the trapped sex slave children so that he could release them. Yeah. He didn't find any.
No kidding, really.
He's been interviewed afterwards and said, you know, well, the intelligence wasn't 100% on this and blah, blah, blah. And,
intelligence wasn't 100% on this, fucking buffoon.
The one thing I will give him is once he found nothing, he stood down and he surrendered.
Okay.
You know?
Wow. That was nice of him.
But apparently, aside from this guy, which was like the culmination of this, the owners of this pizza place, and for that matter, a variety of businesses around it in that block, have been receiving all kinds of threats, phone calls, for months now. Well, I guess not months. This only surfaced a few weeks before the election, so about a month and a half now. And because these people who believe this really believe it and are like, you've got children tied up in the basement. We've got to do something, you bastards. You're whatever. We're lucky nobody was hurt or killed in this incident.
Yep.
You know, and this is one of the examples of this obviously taken to an extreme, but there's so much bullshit that's propagated here. And like I said, maybe that thing with the child rape on Trump was also fabricated. There was a lot of wishy-washy things about the sourcing on that and whether she was put up to it and blah, blah, blah. So, if so,
yeah, I'm not gonna. By the way, I'm not gonna pass up on whether that was fake or not. I mean, I wouldn't. You know, we certainly didn't have like much evidence other. You know, in order to ascertain whether that was a true accusation or not.
And like I said, the sourcing of it, the people who were pushing the case were politically connected and were anti-Trump. And so, okay, look, but the dangers of this all along are taking stuff that is essentially made up out of whole cloth and running with it is incredibly dangerous. And there's, I don't know. We talked about the whole fake news phenomenon last time. There have been all kinds of, we talked about categorization and, there were a couple efforts, plugins for Google Chrome and things like that, that try to do that kind of categorization that we were talking about. The people who've done those have come up under extreme criticism for their choices of categorization. Because, of course, that, and we touched on this last week, you know, there are some cases that may be fairly clear cut. There are others that really are judgment calls that you're bringing your political viewpoint into, and you know, different people doing that would categorize things differently, and I don't know. And so
which is why I thought that, you know, you have to use a pretty light hand with this. Okay, all right. I think that you need to provide people input and certain information. But you can't just be like banning shit and just censoring it like left and right. You know, you could point out like stuff like, hey, this website we hadn't heard from before. Recently opened. We have no track record of it. We can't verify whether this is a valid news source. Okay.
Yeah,
the trick
is even that light hand can be controversial, and so.
But listen, it's like caller ID. It's information. Okay, look, you can make a decision based on that. But look, if you tell somebody that, hey, you know what, this, you know, say you can source this. Hey, this domain was only registered 3 days ago. You know, we don't know if this is really a true.
I don't disagree with the concept, but it is fraught with difficulties in terms of actual implementation.
Nothing is perfect either. You know, look,
let me step back further. Like, if all of these Pizzagate stories had a fake news tag slapped on them, it wouldn't have stopped a damn thing, because a lot of the people who were looking at that would say, you know, that's the establishment mainstream media trying to tell us what to think and blah, blah, blah.
But it depends on, but that's why I don't want to create a fake news tag. I think that, look, people need to understand, and they will find it, if you give people enough information for them to be able to figure out what are trustworthy news sources and what aren't, then people are going to make the decisions to follow those. I do truly believe that right now you do have an issue, because like I've said, even I have fallen for it, where shit, you get stuff that's shared that you just have no fucking clue whether it's true or not, and people are creating it, and a lot of people just don't know.
Well, it's a question of, you know, honestly, Yeah, you can say all you want, before you share those things, you should check them, blah, blah, blah. The reality is, if it comes from a source you otherwise tend to trust, you're not going to check as hard.
Right.
You know? And, or, forget about the source. If what you see aligns with your preconceived notions of what is probably true... You're less likely to check in depth. And I know there are some things that I see go by on Twitter that it's like, oh, such and such made such a statement or whatever. And if it's something that my immediate reaction is, oh, that makes perfect sense, I could see that person saying that, blah, 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 you know, I might go ahead and share that or retweet it or whatever without going through and verifying for a second source. And I probably shouldn't. I should probably wait until I see that in more, you know. But, you know, the reality is there is a filter there that says that if you see something and your immediate reaction is, that can't be true, then you might spend the extra time checking it.
Right.
Whereas if your immediate reaction is, oh, that makes perfect sense, of course that's true.
Look, the fake news story that I fell for was something about hurricane relief for Haiti.
Yeah, you mentioned this last week.
Yeah, and I was just like, it just seemed plausible, you know? I kept thinking, who would make something up like that? And they're like, find out, no, not really. Yeah, it was fake. And I'm like, you create it that you make certain plausibility. Now you would think for God's sakes that somebody that publishes a story about that crazy pedophilia freaking rig, it would immediately say, this is impossible.
And by the way, just to add to that, Alex Jones, apparently on his show, who's the InfoWars guy, made statements that, you know, as part of this, apparently Hillary Clinton had killed some of these children with her own bare hands.
Come on. Really?
Apparently later they put out a clarifying statement saying that he wasn't really talking about those children, that she had blood on her hands. He was talking about Syria and something indirect. But, you know, the original thing certainly sounded like he was. Anyway, you know, people say things and then back off and say what? Anyway. Because, you know, she killed Vince Foster, too. So
that's right. I think we've talked enough about this. I think you
I think you put them. After you just mentioned that, that just... I'm going to get a migraine after hearing that.
Just for the record, all of these sightings of Hillary in the woods, I don't think she's out there hiding the children she's killed.
I don't think so either.
I don't think that's what's happening when people are taking selfies with Clinton in the woods.
I didn't see her carrying a shovel. Anyway.
Okay. It's getting late where you are, Yvonne. You still have time for a lightning round, or you want to call it quits?
I think we should call it quits for this week after that fucking, like, after I just heard that, that just gave me a headache.
Okay, well, I will save my long list of other things for a future week lightning round. And we'll just say goodbye. So thanks, everybody, for listening to yet another Curmudgeon's Corner. We always appreciate it when you come by and listen. As usual, if you're not already on Facebook, like us. We're on Facebook at Curmudgeon's Corner. Go there to comment on the show. Let us know what you think. Ask us questions. Suggest topics. All of that sort of thing. And, of course, to share and tell your friends about the episodes, too. And if you want to help out with the weekly costs of Curmudgeon's Corner, go to patreon.com/curmudgeon's corner. Throw us a couple bucks. We always appreciate that as well. And anything else to say, Vaughn?
After that, I'm out of words.
Okay. Hey, everybody. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.